Okay, we're going back into the world of Mashiach right now. And we're going to look at the pre-Messianic era and look at some of the qualifications that Mashiach will need as well. We're going to be going through the sheets that I gave out last class. So please get those sheets out. We'll go through probably one of the best summaries of everything you need to know about Mashiach that exists. This is like the super duper cliff notes to Mashiach. This is from Ari Kaplan's book, Handbook of Jewish Thought. And it is just like an incredible wealth of information, and it is fascinating. So let's start, go through this together, and some things we'll do in English, and we'll look at some various verses and pasukim from the prophets to see it in the Hebrew. All phones away, please, and off. Let's begin. We already started, and we already saw that the coming of Mashiach and the eventual Geula of the Jewish people, we spoke about last class, is a basic belief in Judaism. Very good. We know that it's going to have to happen in Hashem's time. There is a given time, as we'll see, Be'ito, we have the power to bring it closer, Achishena. That is also from the prophet. We'll do a little bit of that later. However, if we do not merit it, it is going to happen at a time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides. And that is Isaiah chapter 60, 22. I will accelerate it in its due time. It's a contradiction. Either it's in its time or Hashem accelerates it. So it depends. If we are worthy, we can bring it closer. That's Achishena. If not, it happens in its natural course of events. We're going to see there's two ways it can happen. There are two times, if you will, but there are also two ways that it can happen as well. And that's note 3. And it says in note 3, are we all following inside? You don't have to look at me. On the first page, 316. Thus we find two contradictory ideas when it comes to Mashiach. Some of the sources say that the whole coming of Mashiach will take place through great miracles, incredible Nisim. And this is hinted at in the prophecy of Daniel, where he says in the visions of the night, I behold the likes of a human being who came in the clouds of heaven, and he's given an everlasting dominion, and it's not going to pass away. However, if you look at the prophecy of Zechariah, the prophet, he seems to have a more prosaic manner, and he says, a king is going to come to you, he's humble, and he's going to be riding on a donkey. So what this is are two possible ways that this whole Mashiach thing can play out. Miraculously, which is the better way, we're going to assume, which we're going to call the Yitzias Mitzrayim way, and non-miraculously, which we're going to call the Purim way. Because when we left Mitzrayim, the miracles were very manifest and very, very clear. HaKadosh Baruch Hu changed over the nature of the world. But there's another way, and that is the Purim way, where if you read it, it looks kivyachol like a story. It's all nisim, but they are nistar, they are hidden. Okay? If we are worthy, we get the miraculous. If we are less worthy, we get the non-miraculous. Both ways, however, are HaKadosh Baruch Hu guiding history. Both ways are Hashem himself guiding history and bringing along the eventual Messianic era. Now, we read it up to the Rambam, and the Rambam seems to be, remember, the one, Rambam is, the, I think, the only one who really paskened halacha from this whole Mashiach thing. And he says that many of the sages said that there's going to be very little difference between Yemos HaMashiach, except one main difference. Do what you need, Malia?
I didn't get a packet.
Then you can take a packet.
Business.
You can take it.
Okay, thank you.
It's okay.
Sorry.
And he says one of the main differences is, and we'll see this Rambam inside, one of the main differences is that we are not going to be under the subjugation of foreign governments. Now the Jewish people are in Galus, and we act in response to those other nations. Even the fact we're in Eretz Yisrael, we're still in Galus, because we're still under subjugation and fear of other nations. One of the main differences that's going to happen with the coming of Mashiach is that those governments are no longer going to bother us. That seems to be the unanimous nature of the sources. Okay? That's going to happen with the Jewish people at that time. Okay? So there's two ways Mashiach can come. And we're going to see as well that it's going to be a gradual, we mentioned this last class, a gradual manner. And then it reaches a certain point and it turns around quickly. Now, one of the main points as well, chapter 24, verse 5, the Mashiach can come at any time. Now, remember, that's mentioned in the Rambam. V'yafal pi sh'yitmameya im kol z'achak eloa. Right? Mashiach come at any time. And we have to anticipate his coming at any moment. Okay? We do not know the time. So much so that the rabbis, and we're going to think about this a little bit, the rabbis, look down upon people who try to figure out the time. Now, the fact that it says figure out the time means that two possible things. One is, it is possible to figure out the time. There are some calculations that a person can make, that a person could actually figure out the time the Mashiach comes. However, Chazal, or there's no way of doing it, and people still attempt to do it. Now, the weird thing is that the Rambam himself, if I remember correctly, in his Igeret Teman, in his letters to the Yemenite Jews, he does actually make his own personal prediction of what he thinks. That time came and went, as all other predictions have done up to now. The Gemara actually says that a person who tries to predict the actual eventual time of the coming Mashiach, let his bones rot. Now that is a play on words from the word tipach, vayipach and tipach, right? So it's not seen in a very favorable light. We're not so into somebody attempting to figure out the end of days. So what would be the obvious reason for that? What do you think? Why is it meant? My point is, why is it meant to be hidden? Very good. So why is it meant to be hidden? Okay, you could say it's so holy. Meredith, what else?
Because if you know when it's coming, then all of a sudden you can be on your best behavior.
So one opinion is, if you know it's going to come, you're going to mispay for a long amount of time. And right before Mashiach comes, which will be, I don't know, 2013, May 2nd, May 1st, suddenly you're all into tshuva, you're all behaving yourself, and that's going to be your quick get out. Another reason, Amanda.
You can sit around and wait for Mashiach.
Right. In other words, if I have an exact time, I'm going to just sit around and wait for it and not do anything. That's another alternative. I'm going to sit, what's the point? Mashiach's coming anyway, and I'll just sit and wait for it. And what's another reason? Well, the most obvious reason is?
A false Mashiach.
Very good. If a false time is given, and people predict but wrongly, then when that time has come and gone, people become disillusioned. And if you look in Jewish history, and this isn't a Jewish history class, but I'll mention it, I would say that most of the tragedies that happened to the Jewish people have occurred because of this, because of false messiahs, right, on the likes of Shabtai Tzvi and the like, and even Jesus actually was a false messiah, as you now realize. When we look at these times and these people come and pass and they die, then people lose hope, they're disillusioned, and it creates a very negative reality for the people who exist before and after that predicted time. So those could be a few reasons as to why the timing of Mashiach and trying to predict that timing is not seen as a very good thing. Okay? All right. Let's look at some more Kabbalistic sources, which are very interesting. A lot of the traditions that predicts, this comes mostly from the Zohar, that there will be an extremely advanced technology in Yemos HaMashiach. Actually, one of the signs we're in Yemos HaMashiach, or getting close to it, is this incredible movement of technology. And this is based upon Yeshayahu the prophet. There's either prophet, a lot of his prophecies obviously are about Mashiach. By the way, there were many, many prophets. The Gemara Megillah tells us there used to be a lot of prophets out there. I mean, as I always say, the Jewish people are no longer a prophet organization. But if you look in Jewish history, we had a lot of prophets. Well, where are they? Where are the prophecies? The Gemara Megillah says there are a million prophets. Every little town had its own little prophet. Okay, there were actually schools, Chazal say, of prophets. People would actually go to learn to improve themselves in prophecy. So where are all these people? And what happened to their prophecies? Well, there's different levels of prophecy, says the Rambam. Just like you have different levels of intelligence, and suppose we go to university, well, nowadays I'm not so sure, to increase our intelligence, hopefully. That's what we're trying to do. So in schools of prophecy, they would actually have ways to improve a person's ability to prophesy, which for us is an incredible thought. We can't even imagine such a place, you know. It's like, I don't know, like Hogwarts, and unfortunately in our childish minds, but that's pretty much how it's, you know, how unfortunately we see it. But that's the way it used to be. All the prophecies have gone, except the ones we have in Tanakh. And the reasons those ones were kept, because their prophecies have something to do with the end of days. And they were probably the greatest among the prophets. The fact they were able to see so far into the future, they actually could see the messianic, the Yemos HaMashiach. So one of the prophecies comes from Isaiah, and it comes from chapter 35, verses 5 through 6. And he says that at that time, the eyes of the blind will be opened. By the way, I find this most fascinating. Everything I'm going to teach you, this one, it knocks me out the most. The eyes of the blind will be opened, and the ears of the deaf will be unstopped. Then the lame man will leap as a hart, and the tongue of the dumb will sing. So, on the surface, it looks like people who have various ailments, blindness and deafness, will be taken away. Does anyone know when in Jewish history we saw such a thing? Yeah? Very good. At Har Sinai, Rashi himself says, his ruas akolas, they saw the sounds. Okay? And Rashi around there talks about the idea that all ailments were cured at that time. All ailments were cured at that time. Now, there's two ways to understand this piece. Let's just focus on this piece, and then we'll look at questions. This could happen miraculously, or it can happen naturally. Remember, we said there's two ways this can happen. Miraculously or naturally. Fair? And that's connected to Be'ito or Achishana. Miraculously or naturally. Or naturally, the idea of Hashem redeeming us, right, and happening at the time, or we can speed it up. Now check this out. There is a Gemara in the name of Rav Gamliel, which is, and the Rambam bases an idea upon it, and the Rambam says that all miracles can only be for a short amount of time. They don't last forever. A nes, a miracle, can only happen a short amount of time. The sea split, but then it returned. Right? People are healed, and then they go back. Eventually, they die. So all miracles that happen have to, by definition, to be a nes, it has to be a short, temporary reversal of nature. Fair? According to that, this reversal over here, if it's miraculous, then it's only going to be a short amount of time. But we know that the prophet is talking about a long-term healing that will always be, well, always healed. That leads the commentators to say that this healing is not a miraculous thing, because that's only a short amount of time, and this has to last forever. These people will be healed forever. Therefore, they say, this will be the natural state of events. We will reach a point in history which you can't miss if you look at science technology, which I always look at the updates that happen, because I'm obsessed with this stuff, because as I told you, I have no social life. But what's amazing is that every few days, we hear in our day and age, this idea of blindness going away, deafness going away. And if I told you right now, that in 5 years, there'll be no more blind people. Could you believe that? It's possible, sure. I mean, they're creating bionic eyes all the time. I mean, even today, there was a story on it in the papers. Right? They're inserting, they're doing cell regeneration. Yeah, they're doing a lot of research. If I told you no more deaf people in 5 years, it's like, I can hear that. That's not so crazy. By the way, 5 years is a very short amount of time. If I told you they'll actually cure blindness and deafness, not so crazy. And that is the natural, that is the question on this. That is the natural state of events. Yeah? You say something? Right now, they have cochlear implants already. I mean, they're still deaf people, but they're starting to work in it and create this. Right? I mean, there's technologies now that are having people who are disabled. Actually, a good friend of mine called me last night. He's actually disabled, but not paralyzed. And there's an invention that actually came out of Israel. I forgot the name of it. I just saw a movie about it.
It's one of the
that helps you walk, and there seems to be now it's a technology that attaches to people, they're actually curing it, but it's a technology that came out of Israel, created by a paralyzed man, actually, who himself cannot use it because of his certain paralysis. Yeah, it's his upper body as well. But his certain paralysis, he created this machine, this exoskeleton, right? Exo is outside, yeah? Thank you. That you attach yourself and can help you walk. Now, that's not a cure per se, it's an aid, but it's unbelievable. And this is a guy who knows astronomy. This is like technology we're having today. Look, I can't prove anything to you, but it is uncanny that in the natural state of events, I mean, still guided by Hashem, remember, we're seeing this incredible movement in technology that allowing this to happen. That started at a certain point, which we're going to see in a second, a historical date predicted by the Zohar, which if you read your notes, you would have seen already, which, funnily enough, is hinted at in this week's Torah portion. Let's keep going and see that inside. Okay. We are on page 362, chapter 24, 7. Now, one of the reasons that all this is going to happen in Yemosa Mashiach, all these incredible miracles, is that, and by the way, we're going to see as well, that food and hunger will disappear. Will disappear, according to many opinions. Mm-hmm. And we're going to live, and now remember, we can go miraculous or non-miraculous. Some say that suddenly trees, and it's based on the prophets, will be creating vast amounts of food. Yeah? That is based on a Gemara in Kesubas and Shabbos. Have a look. And the idea of all of this will be in order that people will be able to lessen their constant pursuit of food and sustenance and will be able to immerse themselves in spiritual pursuits, which will become the main profession when Mashiach comes. Just involve themselves in purely spiritual pursuits. That's the end goal. That's what we're going for, right? That's Shabbos. We said, Ma'ein Olam Haba. Shabbat is Ma'ein, it's a part of the next world, where there's no physical pursuits, we're meant to just involve ourselves in spiritual pursuits. Yeah? And it says a number of miracles are predicted, such as grapes as large as hen's eggs, and grains of wheat as big as a fist. Now, whether this is miraculous or GM, right, genetic modification, I am not sure. But they're working towards it. And even on the natural cycle, this is one of the things we're going to be seeing. Okay. And Rabbi Gamaliel, as I said, in the Gemara, predicted these miracles. And he said they would not involve any change in the laws of nature. They would be completely natural, but could well be allusions to the advanced technology which we're seeing in our generation. Okay? And all agricultural products, right? It says that clothing and loaves of bread will seem to grow on trees. Now, that'd be metaphorical, but it'll be as easy as plucking something off a tree in its finished state. Now, I don't know if it's natural that the loaves of bread are going to come off trees, but that could be a reference. Historically, they couldn't even envision it, or they could envision it but not imagine it, I guess, of how that could be. But suddenly, food will be so easy. It'll be as though, in other words, right now there's a process to take grain on the stalk and make bread. That process somehow will be lessened very, very greatly. We'll have really, really great bread-making machines that will just do the whole job for you. I don't know, yeah? And we'll reach a point where it will seem as though trees are constantly bearing fruit. Okay? Now, I even looked this up right before class. There's a Gemara that even seems to intimate that we will have space flight. And Rav Kaplan in his book does talk about interstellar colonization. He seems to base it upon the Zohar. I did not see the Zohar inside, but we're going to take his word for it because he does know his stuff. And this is according even to those who don't believe in manifest miracles. There will be this incredible technology that will be moving to other parts of the universe and colonizing those areas. So what is the beginning point? So the Zohar actually makes a reference to it. Okay, now the Zohar was written by Rav Shimon bar Yochai, was added to throughout the ages, and eventually Moshe de Leon put it down into print. But it's kind of like it's almost like a midrash of Kabbalistic thinking that's been added to over the ages. He says something based upon this week's Parsha, of Noah, that in the 600th year of the 6th millennium, the gates of wisdom on high and the wellsprings of low wisdom will be opened. There'll be a certain opening of knowledge, which in knowledge is referred to as water, as wellsprings, right? Right? Ein Mayim Ela Torah. The idea of water and wisdom do go hand in hand in Jewish thought many times. And he says all of this technology and wisdom is there to prepare the world to enter the 7th millennium, that's Shabbos, right? Just as a person prepares themselves towards sunset on the Friday of Shabbat. So this idea of Mashiach is also an Erev Shabbat thing. It's an Erev Shabbat thing. So what is a house like on Erev Shabbat? We spoke about this, right, once before. What's a house like on Erev Shabbat? Is it a calm, nice, tranquil place? No! It's crazy! That's why you don't have your guests come Erev Shabbat, because everyone's running around, you're cooking, you're cleaning, you put the chalice on, turn the lights on, do this, or that, put the mukhs away. And then Shabbat comes. What happens when Shabbat comes? It turns around in an instant. Boom! You go from non-Shabbat to Shabbat. 1 minute you can do melacha, and straight away, bang! It's all over. So that same process is all of Jewish history. 6,000 years into the 7th. If we are now in Erev Shabbat, because we're following the 6,000 years, we are now Erev Mashiach, 5773, and we're moving into that final realm of the 7th millennium, then you can say that the world will also speed up. And you may have noticed that we're living in a very, very fast world, where something which is brand new becomes obsolete within a couple of weeks. Now, you've got to trust me that historically that was never the way. It took like 100, 200 years for something to become obsolete. Suddenly within a few days, right, the new one's coming out, and I've got to have the new edition and the new version and the rest of it. So this is part of the era of Shabbat. We're moving fast, 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 until bang, it reaches a point, which I think we're getting close to, because I can't keep up with my my own life, and it all becomes... And that's based upon, by the way, the pasuk of this week's parasha, Noach, that it says in 600th year, I mean, it's a remes, because Noach wasn't speaking about it, it's talking about at that point of Jewish history, the water started, you know, because the water rained, but Rashi tells us that also water came from the earth and started to fill the world. Yeah? Right? The Mayanot Tahom, there were waters that filled the world at the time of Noach. So Zohar seems to be playing on that theme and using the same date and saying that there'll be a wellspring of water, i.e. information, that is going to spill into the world. What's interesting is that the date that the Zohar predicted was the Jewish year 5600. And that corresponds to the secular calendar of 1840. Now, in 1840, I looked it up, there weren't that many scientific revelations in that year. But the whole technological revolution, uncannily, incredibly, started at that time. And we're here right now, just the next phase of what started in the mid-1800s of the incredible technological revolution that started, right? And we are just moving much, much further and much faster down that line, yeah. Yeah.
But a lot of the things in Judaism and in Torah, like that, sort of go along with that theme, like those are usually cyclical.
You're saying that if you look at Shemitah, that thing is a cyclical thing. So the cycle seems to be ending. In other words, you're right, it does go back. That's this world. Olam Hazeh goes back. You hit 7, you go back to 1. I'll tell you something fascinating in a second, by the way. You go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, then back to 1 again. We're about to enter into the ultimate 7th, which will take us, we're going to see, into 8. So 8 is Lamala Menateva, which is why they say that in the Messianic era, and I'm seeing a source on this, there will actually be an 8th note on the musical scale. I mean, it doesn't exist. It goes da 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 da. It goes back again. But there'll be an 8th note. They'll be able to create an 8th note at that time. We'll enter into higher reality and we'll stay there. So in Olam Hazeh, right, 7 days of the week, 7 colors of the rainbow, 7 notes of the musical scale, it goes 7 and back to 1 again. So at this point, we're going to move into a plane where it's kulo lamala min ha-teva, all above the level of nature. The cyclical nature of things will disappear somehow. We'll move into the higher plane and move into eight. Now that this world is seven, we will move into eight. And eight always represents the miraculous. Chanukah is 8 days. Bris Milah, the eighth day. So we're going to move. That's just hints towards a bigger eighth. Okay? Yeah. This is fascinating, by the way. It's mind-blowing. Yeah. Right, so we mentioned that last class. The non-Jews, there's this common misnomer that the non-Jews all become Jewish. That is not true. As I said, somebody has to buy retail. We can't all buy wholesale, okay? That's a joke. Having said that, the non-Jews, all false religions will disappear. There'll be no false religions at all. Everyone will worship one God. They will live at a much higher level. I heard once, I never saw inside, that they will reach the level we're at now. There'll be a level of, right, the believing Jews now, and we'll move to a higher level ourselves. So there'll be that's why the prophet says, which you read at the end of Aleinu, Bayom Hahu, Yah Hashem Echad Ushmo Echad. Right now, for most people, that line always means that there will be the end of the service and time for Kiddush. Bayom Hahu, Bayom Hahu. That is actually a reference from, I believe, Zechariah Hanavi, Zechariah the prophet, that in those days, Yashem Echad, he's Hashem Echad for us now, Ushmo Echad, and his name will be named one for the entire world. So the entire world, this is not just a Jewish happening. This isn't a splitting of the sea for the Jewish people. This is a mess. By the way, even that, you know, when the sea split for the Jewish people, at a side point, all the seas in the world split. Every water, Rashi says, split. If you're drinking a cup of water in Australia, your water split. Something happened, there was a certain tilt that all waters split. Why? Because Hashem wanted the entire world to know that Hashem, the Jewish people, were leaving Mitzrayim and went through to the Yam Suf. It became like a primordial advertising campaign. I don't know. Right? Everyone knew about it. So too, everyone's going to know about it, and the entire world will be affected in a very positive way. All false religions will disappear. All non-Jews will believe in the one true God and will be praying and learning Torah, I guess, and still not be Jewish.
Yeah.
I don't know how that's possible. I haven't lived in that time, but that's what it seems to say. Listen. Look at America, right? Which is, I don't know, compared to the Middle East, not so God-believing. But how many percentage people of this country believe in some kind of higher power? And if you watch TV, you think no one does. But if you look at Pew surveys, which I look at sometimes on these things, because I have no social life, what percentage? 80-90%. Happens to be that Jews are one of the lowest, interestingly enough, one of the lowest among the quote-unquote believers. We have pretty lowish numbers. Yeah. It's sad, but it's also slightly predictable, because when a Jew believes, there are consequences to his belief, right? Like a Christian can believe, and it's like, I believe, and that's the end of it. But for a Jew, you believe, you've got to do something about it. So I believe it's a little bit of cognitive dissonance that goes with that. But this is a very religious country. I mean, don't think the entire world is, you know, CNN. I mean, this happens to be a very, you know, God-believing country. There's a reason why the presidential candidates, right, I don't know what they personally believe, they profess to believe, but they start talking about God, right? And that is, as we'll see, interestingly enough, a reflection of the people. A reflection of the people. They're trying to do it because they want votes. But the leaders we're going to see, and this is another Nevuah prophecy, which is actually mentioned in the Mishnah, of Sota, we'll see it a little bit later, is really just a prophecy of that, of them wanting to reflect what the people are. So even the leaders are reaching out to and always mentioning God this, God that. Right, suddenly they're from. Everyone's religious all of a sudden when it comes to elections. Mm-hmm. After elections, not so religious. It's like Yom Kippur. Everyone's religious Yom Kippur. They have Yom Kippur, yeah, well, you know, that was yesterday, you know. Yeah.
Yes.
Very, very good. Yes, okay, fine. Very, very good. There's a difference of opinion. To be Mashiach, you have to believe in the entire Torah. The fast days will disappear, that the Rambam says, except Tanit Esther. Actually, according to them, they won't disappear. They'll become happy days. Tish B'Av, which it is now, by the way, will become a Yom Tov. It's actually considered a Yom Tov now. we just mourn on it. But it's actually a Yom Tov. So the fast is all the negative things will disappear. I believe, I remember reading, that things that are related to the past redemption will disappear because the future redemption will take its place. Now, we not right now talk about Pesach, because that's the redemption. But the redemption Mashiach will become so big that it will eclipse that redemption, and that redemption will actually cease to exist in our minds. So what the impact will have on the various mitzvot, I don't know. And there's the famous one of the pig. The pig will become kosher. Right? That's why it has the name Chazir, Lachzor, to return. I don't know if that means pigs will start slightly chewing the cud, whether that's an analogy for this generation that are the pigs, that they will start to be inside true as well. Because remember, we're in the piggy generation right now, Golas, as we said. The gullet is that of the Chazir. Or it means they'll be somewhere finding kosher pig. And if we do, and pigs become kosher, I'll be first online for a ham sandwich. Let me just clarify, that's once they become kosher, in case we have any MSF there. Right. Yeah.
Last week I had met this woman who was dressed, and this was in Georgia, she was dressed, she looked sneeze and everything.
Yeah.
And so I asked her, she was like, I was at the dentist.
You're in Georgia.
Yeah.
And you see a woman who's dressed snua. She's very modest looking, okay.
Yeah. And so I asked her, she was taking my x-rays, and I was like, can I ask you a personal question? And I asked, are you Jewish? And she said, no, I'm Christian, but she's the kind of Christian. She said that she's this specific type of Christianity where they take the Old Testament plus the New Testament, so they actually all dress sneas and everything.
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. Well, there's a lot. Listen, first of all, Christianity divides into like thousands of different groups.
Yeah.
Right, there's no doubt about that. But absolutely, my wife used to work. Really?
Yeah.
I hear.
She also was telling me about.
I hear. I mean, if the non-Jews start wearing kikiriki, we're done. We're like, we're Mashiach. Mashiach is here. Mashiach is here. Okay, so that's a whole different discussion on what Christianity is, what the claims are, and why they are not obligated to the mitzvah. One of the things Jesus says is, now the Jew, we are not bound by the law, right? Which is one of the main reasons that the Pharisees, the rabbis of the time, did not accept Jesus, because we're going to see that Mashiach cannot change the laws, okay? It's based upon an idea which is seeing that things will start to change. So the whole religion is based upon ours. So there is some truth to it, but I want to put a caveat. That doesn't make Jesus into the Messiah, obviously. Okay, and as we're going to see, the predictions or the prophecies have not come true. Right, which is why they had to come up with the whole idea of the second coming. See? But I personally think it's a good thing. Now, there's a difference of opinion. I'll tell you, this is fascinating to me. I'm also obsessed with this as well. Check this out. We see, and by the way, in the Orthodox world, the jury is out on this one. I've not seen a real sighting on either side. But when it comes to, do we like these Christians who are giving us money, helping us make Aliyah, or not? It's difference of opinion. There are many Jewish groups, religious groups among them, by the way, who are taking the money of these Christians. And there's arguments on both sides. I read an article on this, actually, written by two Orthodox rabbis. One side is, they're giving us the money because they want us to move to Israel so that eventually the Messiah can come, because we're going to see, in order for Mashiach to come, and the majority of the Jewish people need to be living in Israel. Say that again. In order for Mashiach to come, the majority of the Jewish people need to be living in Israel. The reason that is because you cannot have Nevuah prophecy unless the majority of the Jewish people are living in Israel. And the prophet has to speak from Israel. There are a couple of exceptions to that. One second. Right? But they are historical, and each one had their own reasons. So these people are giving money. So they're saying, well, they're just doing that because they want the rapture to come, because they want us all to go out there so that we can all die and Jesus comes second coming. That may be true. The other side says, okay, that's their false belief. Let them support us. Let's take their political power and their money. Let them pay for us to do it and do this good to Israel, all the institutions, and then the rest, and the Jewish people out there who benefit from it. Right? And then Mashiach comes, we'll work it out. I'll say this very clearly, not all non-Jews, by the way, Christians, even the very religious evangelical ones, want that. They just see the Jewish people as God's chosen people. They see from the blessing of Abraham, those who you bless will be blessed. The bracha we know, Rashi tells us, we're going to read next week, right? Hashem gave Avraham Avinu and his descendants the ability to bless. Avrecha, Avrecha, those who you bless will be blessed. So it used to be Hashem would give blessings and then gave the power to Avraham Avinu that he could give godly blessings. That's like giving a bracha to someone. Who would he give brachas? Hashem gave us that power. So they believe there's many Jewish people who have the power, and we have to, and those who are bad to the Jewish people get cursed, because it says that right afterwards. So they're pragmatic, and they want to see it. And some say, but it's dangerous. So this right now is playing out, which I'm personally fascinated in, and there are Christian groups, and there are religious Jews out there who are accepting this money.
What do you think?
My personal opinion? Yeah. Take it.
That's my
personal opinion. Don't quote me on that. That's my personal opinion. But then again, I'm not a prophet, so I don't know what the results are going to be. But I'm into prophets, so there you go. What? I hear. Yeah, it's interesting they want to give it, though. Yeah.
But you said, like, Mashiach would come either during that date or we could bring it earlier.
A date, not that date. A date, we don't know what it is, or we can bring it earlier, yeah. I didn't say good, either very, very good or very, very bad.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, so, because then I was going to
say... And it depends who's that talking about. In other words, many of the Jews may not have that status of very bad because their tenek shenishba, we spoke about that already, may have the idea of a kidnapped child. So may I refer to the religious Jews? So it could be. Okay, your point is?
Therefore, today with society and assimilation and all those things, do you think it's even possible that we could bring the Mashiach earlier? By being good about it?
So the answer is yeah. In other words, even with that, the fact that our efforts are so, when the Jewish people left Egypt, had they stayed 1 year longer, Hashem took us out earlier, according to many opinions, had they waited 1 year later, they would have waited, they wouldn't have been able to completely assimilated. Hashem took us out at that moment for a reason. Hashem himself had to go in and take us out. Hashem had to go in and pull us out himself. By the way, they say because it was so tumma, it was so vishtunkan, it was so spiritually impure where the Jews were, that had the malachas, so the Arizal says, had an angel gone in, even he would have been affected by the negative environment. I have no idea what that means. So Hashem had to go in. You think we have it bad now? And we do. Hashem himself had to go in and pull us out. Had he remained there 1 year longer, as we say in Agada, even one more year, we wouldn't have got out. And most Jews didn't get out, interestingly enough. Yeah. So Hashem took us out. So that could be a thing. Right. So I'm saying that's on the negative. So on the positive, we say that even with that environment, people still got out. So they must have had a merit to get out. Those people who did survive and actually get out as well. Must be doing something right. Yeah.
What's going to happen to holidays?
Jewish holiday, what happens to them? So supposedly, as I said, when I read it, the way the holidays that relate to Pesach may disappear. I've read others, and the Rambam says that all mitzvahs will exist, and except the sad days, right? He says all the Tanisim will disappear. All fast days will be gone. Including Yom Kippur.
Really?
Gone.
No,
Rosh Hashanah. I don't know. Yeah.
Last night you said something about Sukkot.
That's a test, right? That's the idea of the non-Jewish nations, the Gemara says, will be tested with a Sukkah. I don't know. That's what the Gemara says. I don't know exactly. That's a whole story, but that's about the whole Gemara we've studied. Hashem will taste the non-Jewish nations because they will complain, the Gemara says, and say it's not fair. You gave them mitzvah. We didn't get mitzvah. It's not fair. Had we had mitzvah, we also would have been a great nation. So Hashem says, fine, I'll give you a mitzvah. Let's see how you fare with it. And he gave them sukkah, and they go into the sukkah, and the sun starts to beat extremely hard, and they leave, and they give the sukkah a kick, and they push it as they leave. And there's a whole discussion because if it's unbearably hot or cold in a sukkah, you are actually allowed to leave it. Right? You don't have to have tzar, you can leave the sukkah. So they say when they do it, they gave it a zetz at the end, they gave it a smack at the end. So that shows they weren't into it. I don't know if that's a physical thing. I will say, though, very interestingly, and this is a whole different discussion, but I'll mention it. The final war, and this is Rav Hirsch says this, will be Gog and Magog. That's what the prophet speaks about. That war may have happened, by the way, whatever. But Gog and Magog. What does Gog mean? Rav Hirsch says it comes to the word Gag. What's Gimel Gimel spell? Roof. Roof. So he says it's actually be a war of the roof and the non-roof people. Well, what roof are we talking about? The roof of the sukkah. Those who have emunah and those who don't have emunah. Faith and belief. And that's really the reference that the war is going to be involved. That's why Samuel Feld Hirsch talks about this idea of the roof people, those who put faith in the roof, right? The security of their own heads, their own personal built safe havens, or those who put faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is the sukkah, which is a leaky roof. Remember, in order to be a sukkah, it has to have schach. And schach has to be leaky and has to, by definition, not protect. That's the definition of a sukkah.
What do you mean that it may have happened?
This, it may also be a physical war, and that physical war may have actually occurred. Like, someone move around, turn that light on, please. Like a we're doing like a Mexican wave over here. Just so you know, you'll look ridiculous when you do that. Okay, fabulous, great. Okay. Look at this. It goes far. I want to finish this today because, at least the first part. Chapter 24:10. There will be a tradition. There is a tradition, I should say, that may have anticipated the tremendous destructive power of modern technology. Thus, we are taught, turn over, 3:6:4, that in Yemos HaMashiach, and this is based upon a source of Rav Eliezer, and he says that in that generation, the King Mashiach will come in a generation that has Rei Kliya, which means capable of bringing about its own, Ra'oi Kliya, or you can talk about total destruction, can actually destroy itself. So there will be a generation that has the power to destroy itself, which, I mean, one could possibly see in that this whole idea of nuclear weapons. We have the ability now that one person can press one button, chas v'shalom, and destroy the entire world. You know, historically, you went to war, you could only hurt those people around you. And now it's become terrifying. There will be a... It's going to be a change, and it's going to be a big change, and it will happen gradually. But the coming of Mashiach is called something. The various terms we're going to see, one we'll see in a moment called the footsteps, which actually comes from the Mishnah, but it's also called the Chevlei HaMashiach, the Chevlei HaMashiach. And what that term refers to is the birth pangs, the birth pangs. Birth pangs means the pain of birth. And that is the metaphor, the mashal, that was used by Chazal, this Chevlei Mashiach, the birth pangs of Mashiach, the birth pains, when Mashiach comes. So why would that metaphor be used? So let's think about that for a little bit. Why would that be? Well, one thing we know about birth is a very interesting thing. It's gradual. You can't speed it up, right? It goes from 0 to 9 months, whether you like it or not. Okay. It does come prematurely, but the natural state of events is it's a gradual process of growth, and it gets more and more painful, and I don't want to ruin the surprise for you, but it gets more and more painful and more uncomfortable until it reaches a point where, as my wife tells me, you want to die. And actually, interestingly enough, that's actually what happens. Because the baby goes from actual life to death, and then back to life again. Right? It's alive in the womb. And then everything breaks down, and it goes from a liquid environment to an air environment, which is the exact opposite. Right? The tubes open. That which is blocked becomes unblocked. That which is blocked becomes blocked, unblocked. And it all turns around. And suddenly this baby goes from one environment to another. So it actually dies for a few moments, as it were, because everything is blocked off. And then, boop, it moves to life again, a complete new life. And it happens in an instant. You go from this extreme pain and destruction to complete life in a moment. So the analogy may not only be, I think, this slow movement into birth, but the birth process itself, which is Purim-like, v'nehafachu, it goes from absolute pain and death to absolute life in an instant. And actually, it also goes from pain to happiness and to laughter. And this idea of laughter actually is a very messianic thing. There's a strong reference to the idea of schok, laughter, and the end of days. Az yamale schok pinu. We know Rabbi Akiva, when he spoke about the end of days and the building of the third base of Migdash, at the end of Gemara Makot, says that then we'll be laughing. Right? Az is always the future. Right? There's going to be a laughter in the future. And laughter is always that thing where it's going one way and then turns around and goes another way. Doesn't it? Every joke that you hear, which elicits laughter, not happiness, but laughter, is always going one way, and then after it turns around, which is why in Purim we laugh. It's the laughing holiday. Because you're going one way, and then, boop, it turns around and becomes laughter. Can you see that? It's a very deep point, but I want you to at least to pick up on it for a moment. So this idea of Chevli Mashiach, the birth pang, that mashal, and I'm sure there are many other reasons why they use that particular thing, is found in Chazal. And the Maral talks about it at great length as well. Okay. There is another tradition, and I want to do this Mishnah, and then this Pasuk from Isaiah in the Hebrew. That we'll have to do in the Hebrew, because it's a very important one. And this is based upon the idea that before Mashiach comes, there'll be a hatred towards religion and scholars. Okay? And scholars, those who are scholarly. The Chachamim, the rabbis, those people who profess belief in anything. And we'll start with the Pasuk, and then we'll look at the Mishnah. There's a Pasuk in Isaiah, and then we'll look at the Mishnah. And the Pasuk says, Vatahi ha'emet nederet. Okay? There is going to be a time when truth will be loved, right? Vasar mira mishtalel. But those people who leave evil, those people who leave evil will be considered crazy. They will be laughed at. All right, so look at one thing, one second. Yeah. Those people who get involved in spiritual activities will be laughed at.
What does that mean?
Truth is going to be lacking. There's going to be a lack of truth. Vatahi emet nederet. There's going to be, people are going to be leaving truth. Right? There's going to be a lot of that. And those people who leave truth being good, and those people who leave truth, and those people who leave the evil, yeah, will be considered, will be laughed at.
You said truth will be loved.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean I actually meant leaved. They'll be leaving it. I'm so sorry. No, truth will be loved.
Left.
Will be left. I'm sorry. I take that back. Right.
So
left. Right. Thank you. Right. Those people. But here, emed ne deret, is truth becomes lacking. Right. It's going to be a lack of truth. The Samira, and those people who leave evil ways, right, towards truth, Mishtolel will be laughed at. Yeah? And the Yar Hashem, the Yar Beinav, and Hashem saw this, and it was all evil in his eyes, and there'll be no justice. So based upon this verse of MS, being lacking, there's going to be a lack of truth. There'll be, actually, I think even the Machaber, the Shulchan Aruch says, there'll be pockets of truth. There'll be small pockets of truth that will be available, but most people will be involved in non-truths. And those people who want to move towards the MS, towards the good, will be laughed at. But we'll see it in a few moments, there will be a move towards that. Let's have a look at this Mishnah. And the Mishnah, at the end of Sota, actually expands and adds to this and says the following. It says, with the ikvos Mashiach, this is Aramaic, with the coming of Mashiach. Now this is called the footsteps of Mashiach. Remind me, I don't do that right now, but remind me why this expression is also used for coming Mashiach. So we did birth pangs, but I want to do this idea of footsteps and feet in general when it comes to Mashiach. That's a very interesting analysis of Judaism. So if someone write that down, remind me next class. But the Mishnah lists a bunch of things you're going to notice building up towards the Messianic era. And by this list is like a what's up today, really. It says, insolence will increase, inflation will soar, the vine will give fruit but will be very expensive, governments will turn to heresy, that is against belief in God, there will be no rebuke. The meeting place, people will not rebuke each other. Someone does wrong, everyone will be like, oh, that's okay, it's no problem. It's not, there's no milchig or fleishig, it's all parav, it's all good, you know. Meeting places of the wise will be for znus, says the Mishnah, will be for immorality. The Galil will be nechrav, destroyed, and then it gives another location called Givla, I don't know what that is referring to, but a place up north in Israel will be destroyed, okay, and there has been much destruction lately actually. Those who fear sin, those people who start becoming firm and religious, will be despised. They will not be liked. Yeah? I'll just read the rest of it.
What's the last one?
Those who fear sin will be despised. If you don't, if you stay, if you start becoming, you do tshuva, people hate you. They're like, what are you doing? You're crazy?
What's the third
one? Inflation will soar. Vine will give fruit, but wine will be expensive. And then it quotes our Mishnah. Ve'emet teheh nederet. There's going to be a lack of truth in the world. Narim p'nei zekeinim yalbinu. Young people will make young older people embarrassed. Now we're going to see, interestingly, when we finish this off in the next class, there's going to be a gap between the elderly and the young. It's part of that young people will embarrass and look down upon elders. It was always the young people respect their elders. There'll be a reversal. Rav Kaplan seems to think this is connected to the technology and the speed of things, where older people will seem completely outdated, and there'll just be two different universes, the old and the young, which, you know, we already see, you know. There'll be that separation. Zakenim yamdu b'fnei zakatanim. Older people, says the Mishnah, we'll write this down next class, but you can write it down now. Old people will stand for the young people. Now, we know there's halacha, and it's common practice that young people stand for the older people, right? Or they're meant to, especially on the buses and the subways. But we know there's halacha, also the person should stand for older person, out of respect. Suddenly, we have this upside-down world, olam hafuch, where older people are standing for younger people. The younger people are starting to... There'll be a disgrace of the older people. But kama b'ima, a woman goes against her daughter, and a daughter goes against her. A daughter goes against her mother, and a girl, a kala, goes against her mother-in-law. Nothing new there, right? Oyveish anshe veso. There'll be a lot of hatred. And then it says, and this one I want to do in Hebrew because it's a fascinating piece. Penei dor kepenei hakelev, and we'll finish with this. So we did everything on the boards. Penei dor, the face of the generation will be like the face of a dog. That's what the Mishnah says. Now, up to now, it's been very, very specific about things that are happening and going to happen. And you should look up this Mishnah, by the way. End of Sota. It's available in English. You can read it upstairs. Penei dor, in the base of Midrash. Penei dor, the face of the generation, the face of a dog. So, I read two commentaries on this, very cryptic, which are fascinating. Number one is, people be like dogs. What are dogs? They care about themselves, right? If there's a piece of meat, everyone wants it themselves, they don't care about anybody else, right? Financially, it's all about me, and not enough care about other people. Okay, but it doesn't actually say that. It says, Penedor, the face of the generation, is like the face of a dog. Says the Vilna Gaon, an unbelievable thing. This is referring to the leaders of the generation before Mashiach comes. And the leaders will be like the face of a dog. What does that mean? Look like a Chihuahua? Like a Dalmatian or something? And the answer is no. He says, when a dog walks with a person, what does the dog always do? It always runs ahead, right? It always runs ahead. And then the person, the owner, makes a left turn. What does a dog do? It turns its face, it sees where its owner's going, and then turns around and follows the owner. Says the Vilna Gaon, so too will the leaders be in that generation. See, leaders are meant to lead. But before Mashiach comes, we'll see leaders that seem like they're leading, but they're like dogs. They follow the people. They become the master. It looks like the leaders, but really they're just the followers, and they're just moving in the direction that the people want them to move in. I don't know if there's a better description of politics today, right? But it's uncanny. Whoever you look at, all politicians, they follow. Now, it used to be leaders, kings and the like, were very powerful people. They told you what it was, and they taxed you, and they made you do it. They led you with a rod. Even good people always there too, but they always led. But there'll be this reverse of Vilna Gaon. A few hundred years ago, he said this. Well, we'll see that the Pnei Hador, based upon this Mishnah, will be like a dog that actually, it looks like they're leading, but we're leading them. And what we want, they'll turn their faces, then they'll turn their bodies, and they will follow. And that is an incredible pshat in the final part of Mishnah, Pnei Dor Ke Pnei Kelev. Okay, we'll stop over there. We'll pick this up, Mitzvah Hashem, on Tuesday.